Hi, I'm Ali, and welcome everyone to All Things Psychology. Thank you so much for tuning in. In this podcast, we're going to dive deep into the topic of psychology. We will discuss its history and how it evolved into the discipline we know today. We will cover famous pioneers of psychology and their contributions to the field, as well as major topics in modern psychology and contemporary research. If you're interested in getting a better understanding of what psychology is and does and how it came to be, then stay tuned. Today's episode will be the last where we concern ourselves with ancient psychological thoughts. Last week, we started with ancient India, especially the Astika traditions of Hindu philosophy. This week, we will go into the Nastika traditions of Hindu philosophy. So, let's get right into it, shall we? Forgotten, I will quickly explain to you the difference between Astika and Nastika traditions. Hindu philosophy can be roughly divided into orthodox and heterodox traditions. The orthodox traditions, also called Astika, consider the Vedas as a true source for knowledge and accept them as authority. The heterodox traditions, called Nastika, reject the Vedas. The Vedas are the oldest Hindu scriptures. We covered the Astikas last week, so in this week's episode, we will continue with the Nastikas. The heterodox schools of thought include Charvaka, Ayivika, Ajnana, Jainism, and Buddhism. I will now explain each of them in turn. Charvaka school believes that perception and experiments are valid and reliable sources of knowledge, but it sees direct perception as being the only means of establishing and accepting the truth. Furthermore, what cannot be perceived and understood by the senses does not exist. It is foolish to seek what cannot be seen. All that truly exists are the observable elements of air, earth, fire, and water. The ultimate good in life is pleasure, and the only evil is pain. Pursuing pleasure and avoiding pain is the sole purpose of human existence. It further believes that religion is an invention of the strong and clever to prey on the weak. As already said, the Charvaka school sees perception as the primary and proper source of knowledge, while inference is seen as right or wrong, and thus conditional or invalid. According to it, there are two types of perception, internal and external. External perception is described as that which arises from the interaction of the five senses and worldly objects, while internal perception is described by this school as that of the inner senses, the mind. Inference is the derivation of a new conclusion and truth from one or more observations and previous truths. Inference is useful but prone to error, since inferred truths can never be free from doubt. Inference is good and helpful, but the validity of the inference is questionable, sometimes in certain cases and often in others. There is no reliable means by which the efficacy of inference as a means of knowledge can be established. Until the relationship between two phenomena or between observation and truth is proven to be an unconditional truth, it is an uncertain truth. Complete knowledge is achieved when we know all observations, all premises, and all conditions. However, the absence of conditions cannot be established beyond doubt by perception because some conditions may be hidden or elude our ability to observe. Everyone relies on conclusions in daily life, but when we act uncritically, we err. While our conclusions are sometimes true and lead to successful action, it is also a fact that conclusions are sometimes wrong and lead to error. Truth, then, is not an infallible property of inference. Truth is merely an accident of inference, and a separable one at that. We must be skeptical, question what we know by inference, question our epistemology. I think these thoughts are just amazing. Those are extremely scientific thoughts, which still hold true in research and science today. The Jayavakas denied metaphysical concepts like reincarnation, an extracorporeal soul, the efficacy of religious rites, other worlds, fate, an accumulation of merit or demerit through the performance of certain actions. They also rejected the use of supernatural causes to describe a natural phenomena. To them, all natural phenomena were produced spontaneously from the inherent nature of things. They did not believe in karma, samsara, rebirth, an afterlife, or religious rite. All attributes that represented a person resides in a body, not in the soul, and there is nothing beyond the senses. They believed that consciousness is an emergent property. The Jayavakas were very critical of the Vedas and Buddhist scriptures and said that they were invented by humans and had no divine authority. They didn't think that there is a need for ethics or morals at all. The Jayavakas conceptualized pleasure unlike many other Indian philosophies. They believe that there is nothing wrong with sensual pleasure and that it's impossible to experience pleasure without pain. Wisdom for the Jayavakas is enjoying pleasure and avoiding pain as far as possible. The school believed in absolute determinism and that there is no free will or karma. No human effort could change this lack of free will, and the karma ethical theory is a fallacy. They did not believe that actions had morals to them or that an afterlife might be affected by those actions. Actions had immediate effects in one's current life, but without any moral traces. And since there is no free will, both the action and the effect of that action were predetermined. Therefore, there are no objective moral laws. The Ayivika school believed that all beings undergo some kind of development, which culminates in a course of time in final salvation to which all beings are destined under the impact of the factors of destiny, nature, and change. When it comes to religion, the Ayivika school didn't believe in a deity as a creator of the universe. There is no cosmical afterlife or final resting place. They did, however, believe that every being has a soul, or Atman, which is formless and has a material form that helps meditation. The soul passes through many births and ultimately progresses onto its predestined nirvana. The Ayivika school believed that everything is composed of minuscule atoms. The qualities of things are derived from aggregates of atoms. The aggregation of and nature of these atoms is predetermined by cosmic forces. Atoms cannot be further divided and cannot penetrate another atom. They cannot be created or destroyed. They further do not grow or expand or split or change. They instead move, assemble, and combine to form the perceived. Everything that can be experienced is a mere function of atoms operating under deterministic cosmic rules. Jnana school is a school of radical Indian skepticism. According to this school, it is impossible to gain knowledge of metaphysical nature or to determine the true value of philosophical propositions. Adherents of Jnana saw the possibility of knowledge as doubtful, since the claims to knowledge were mutually contradictory. Even if knowledge was possible, it was useless and detrimental to the final salvation. Jainism had a dualistic worldview, as there are two distinct categories of existence: the living, conscious, or sentient being, and the non-living, or material. Jainism believed in three pramanas as a means of knowledge, perception, inference, and testimony for reliable experts. Overall, Jainism identified 5 kinds of knowledge: omniscience, scriptural knowledge, sensory knowledge, clairvoyance, and telepathy. Jainism believed that the ultimate good for a living being is the liberation from samsara. The means to achieve this liberation is threefold, namely right vision, right knowledge, and right conduct. Right vision means seeing based on true knowledge. Right knowledge means knowing living beings as they truly are. Sentient beings can attain perfect and complete knowledge of all things and therefore become enlightened. But for most beings, the omniscience of their soul is blocked by the karmic particles stuck to the soul. Jain scriptures are the only source of such knowledge and are thus seen as the highest authority in Jain philosophy. In Jainism, 3 related doctrines deal with the nature of knowledge: the theory of many-sidedness, the theory of conditioned predication, and the theory of partial standpoints. The theory of many-sidedness says that reality is complex and multifaceted, and thus can only be understood from a multitude of perspectives. It affirms the reality of all of our perceptions, even those which contradict each other, such as continuity and change, arising and perishing. Since objects are infinite in their qualities and modes of existence, they cannot be completely grasped in all aspects and manifestations by finite human perception. This embracement of contradictions can also be seen in the theory of the soul and its metaphysics. The soul is both eternal in its intrinsic nature and yet also changing. The universe is both eternal and has no beginning, but yet is also non-eternal since it goes through cycles. Thus, the Jain saw their metaphysics as a middle path, embracing both permanence and impermanence as metaphysically fundamental. Overall, the theory of many-sidedness encourages its adherents to consider the views and beliefs of their rivals and opposing parties. The theory of conditioned predication postulates 7 modes of predication, which are: 1. From a certain perspective, P certainly exists. 2. From a certain perspective, P certainly does not exist. 3. From a certain perspective, P certainly exists and certainly does not exist successively. 4. From a certain perspective, P certainly exists and certainly does not exist simultaneously. 5. From a certain perspective, P certainly exists and P certainly exists and does not exist simultaneously. 6. From a certain perspective, P certainly does not exist and P certainly exists and does not exist simultaneously. And 7. From a certain perspective, P certainly exists and does not exist successively, and P certainly exists and does not exist simultaneously. The theory of standpoints postulates that all viewpoints are only partial expressions of the truth, and therefore no statement can claim the absolute truth as it is only arrived at from one particular viewpoint. There are 7 viewpoints through which a person can make complete judgments about absolute reality. These are: common sense or universal view, generic or class view that classifies it, pragmatic or a particular view assesses its utility, linear view considers it in present time, verbal view that names it, etymological view uses the name and establishes its nature, and actuality view considers its concrete particulars. Today is, with over 520 million followers, the world's 4th largest religion. It originated in ancient India between the 6th and 4th centuries BC. In the episode about ancient China, we already covered the 4 Noble Truths, so we will not dwell on them too long. I still would like to touch on them a bit here. The 4 Noble Truths are considered one of the most important teachings in Buddhism and are the first teaching given by the Buddha. The first noble truth is dukkha, which means incapable of satisfying. We as humans crave and desire and are ignorant of the true nature of reality, like impermanence and a non-existence of the self, through which suffering arises. It produces karma, tying us to samsara, the endless cycle of death and rebirth. The second noble truth is samudaya, It is the origin of suffering, together with craving, desire, and attachment. The third noble truth is Nirodha, which means cessation or ending. It states that when we let go of cravings, desires, and attachments, suffering will stop, karma will cease to be produced, and rebirth ends, leading to nirvana and peace of mind. And finally, the fourth noble truth is Magga, also called the Noble Eightfold Path. It is a path that leads to the renouncement of cravings, desires, and attachment, and to the cessation of suffering. Closely tied to the Four Noble Truths is a cycle of birth and rebirth, also called samsara. Samsara is painful and unsatisfactory, perpetuated by desire, ignorance, and karma. Rebirth is a cyclical process where sentient beings live multiple successive lives as different forms of life. What form of life a being will be reborn as depends on one's karma in the previous life, which is influenced by certain actions. There is no agreement on what exactly is reborn. There is a consensus, however, that rebirth does not involve a soul, since the Anapman rejects the concept of a permanent self or an unchanging eternal soul. Karmic seeds are produced by both good and bad actions or thoughts. The form and realm of rebirth, the social class, and other life circumstances of the next life are all influenced by those karmic seeds. There are six realms of existence in which one can be rebirthed in: heavenly, demigod, human, animal, hungry ghosts, and hellish. Liberation from samsara is called nirvana, which is achieved through the insight into impermanence and non-self. It is the soteriological goal of Buddhists. Nirvana is a state of enlightenment, bliss, and emptiness, accompanied by the realization of non-self. Several paths have been proposed which lead to the cessation of dukkha. The most famous one in the West is the Noble Eightfold Path. It is a middle way between more extreme paths. The Noble Eightfold Path is divided into three divisions and eight factors. The three divisions are wisdom, moral virtues, and meditation. The division of wisdom contains the factors right view and right intention. The right view is the belief in the Buddhist principles of karma, rebirth, and the Four Noble Truths. Right intention means striving for loving kindness and compassion. The division of moral virtues contains the factors right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Right speech includes not lying or being rude and not telling someone what another person says about them. Right action includes not killing or injuring another living being and not participating in sexual misconduct. Right livelihood means living a simple life and not bringing suffering to other sentient beings. The division of meditation contains the factors right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Right effort means preventing unwholesome states disrupting meditation. Right mindfulness means being aware of what one is doing and experiencing in a present moment. Right concentration means correct meditation and concentration. This concludes our Ancient Civilizations series, where we dove into the ancient civilizations of Egypt, Greece, China, and India, and how those cultures influenced and shaped early psychological thought. Our next series will be all about psychological science, so if you want to know more about how exactly psychological research is done and how psychologists gain insight into the human mind, then stay tuned. If you liked this episode, it would mean a lot to me if you left a review and subscribed to never miss an episode. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram at allthingspsychology_podcast to join in on a conversation and to get some accompanying material to each episode. Thanks so much for listening. Stay curious, stay healthy, and see you next time. Bye.